pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong. Here. Kathy Buckley, here. Leonard King.
Here.
Sam Karaski.
Here.
Richard Levine.
Here.
Ed Marin.
Here.
Pauline Stone.
Here.
Steve Trombley.
Here.
Charles Simpson.
And she, resolved the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education to approve the agenda.
Motion.
By Richard.
Second.
By Leonard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? At this time, we have about 5 minutes for public comments. Anybody would like to address the board at this time? Yes, sir.
Steve, my name is Sam Dyer. I live on 227 Duquette Road, and my issue, Joey, I spoke to your attorney today about an absentee ballot issue. And I know the law is the law, but and Joe, I've worked with Joe for 15 years, but apparently I need clarification on town or city. Okay, it says city. Not too many of us live in a city, okay? And I don't know why this law was written the way it was, but I think we're discouraging people from voting. And this is about somebody who is working out of the area at the time. And with you, with all the controversy that's going on here, I think you'd want as many people that could vote to vote. And Joe said it's not a board issue. If there's a state board that governs this law, you know, and I've got to live with it, I would accept it. But I would like to just plead my case a little bit if I could. I think I told you, I don't know how many of the other board members, but when my wife applied for the application, she was given the ballot, okay? She sent the ballot in, and then it was rejected. I've got the ballot here. You know, your polling place is open from 9 to 8, okay? You know, she goes to work at 9 o'clock in the morning. She doesn't have an hour or two to come back, okay? And I'm sure there's other people that have the same feeling. You know, we have all got laws, and there's common sense in gray areas, okay? So if I could just leave this with you, or I can read it to you, it's about a town and a city. You know, there is no difference between a town and a city, okay? We have a government or a governmental agency that covers us, and in every, not every town, but most towns do have school districts, okay? And I will be here to vote, you know. I'm going to give this back to you, because if you do change your mind, or if you get a clarification, the ballot is here. If it's not, I would like to know either way. Yep. And Joe, you know, thank you for your explanation, but I think you're not the judge and jury in this, and I think that there's got to be a committee that should answer to this, not one person. Okay, that's one taxpayer, and thank you for your time. I hope I'm under the 5 minutes.
Just give it to the board clerk, yeah. And Joe, is that something we can research with SED or?
I don't believe so. I think the law is clear about qualifications for an absentee ballot. If you are outside your, and this is the statute we're looking at, if you're outside of the county or a city on business or for employment purposes, and you're a qualified voter, you would be qualified to fill out and submit an absentee ballot. There's no provision in there if you're outside of your town of residence. It's either, it seems to be, if you live in a county and you live in a town within a county, then you have to be outside the county to qualify for an absentee ballot. Now, I told Sam this afternoon that I understand his wife's predicament. I don't particularly agree with the way the law is written. Should really be based upon distance from your voting area, not necessarily whether you live in the city or a county, but this is the state legislature adopted this law. It's the education law, section 2018A of our education law, and the only entity that can change it, as I understand it, is the state legislature.
And I'm not asking for it to be changed, Joe, but I think if you read the application, not once does it ask what city do I live in, okay? It's asking about townships. And then when you go through and you meet the criteria, it mentions about being work ethic or work where your work is. And I mean, we're going to let people that are incarcerated vote and everything else, you know?
You're right.
That's why I'm saying it needs a little bit of common sense. And if you're right, I just want somebody above you to tell me that you're right, okay? It's not that I don't distrust you. I think there should be a panel or something.
We'll see what we can do.
Thank you.
We'll get back to you, Sam.
Okay. I would appreciate it.
Okay.
Yes.
I have a couple minutes. Is there any other public comment? Anybody want to address the board? Yes, sir.
My name is Herman Burnell, and I'm here tonight seeking approval to have my wife's portrait put up in the Cumberland Head School where she taught for over 30 years from 1962 to 1992 in her memory. I don't know who it. I think Scott Einholz in the middle. I wrote a letter to him about it not last October before. We thought she would expire by that time, but she up for the cookie she held on, and it's the first anniversary of her death, and I think it's time here to seek your approval for that portrait, and if you want it, I'll show you the portrait that I got. And
okay. We can accept the portrait, and we're going to have to bring it to the policy committee and make sure we're doing the policy
committee. I understand
right.
That. And you want me to bring it over to you?
You could do that, sure, sir.
Thank you.
We will send this to the committee, and we will make sure that we go through the policy and make sure we're following what we're supposed to, and we will let you know when we do something.
If you notice on that picture, I make sure that the basement town colors. District, and she loved teaching. And Joel Labarando down here can verify that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to move on. Reports. Stramo?
Thank you. A couple of items, actually three. Skills USA is a student leadership organization for students who are training in the trade, industry, or health occupations. There are over 300,000 members nationwide. 356 New York State students competed in our Area 3 competition, which was held in the Schenectady region recently. Four of the Beekmantown Central School District students competed, and two were fortunate to receive awards. Those individuals who competed and received letters of congratulations from Mr. King, our BOCES superintendent, included Jeremiah Vizan and Sarah Thompson. The other two students who competed went a little bit step further and received state recognition, and that was, and I'm going to look for pronunciation, Cole Desbal, am I saying that correctly, Cole Desbal, received the Statesman Award in Culinary Arts, and Alicia Relation received a second place in Crime Scene Investigation. So congratulations to those students for their hard work and their recognitions. High school recently was notified that the high school counseling program has met the criteria to become a recognized American School Counselor Association model program by the ASCA. Approximately 400 school programs nationwide have earned the recognition since they first began bestowing it. That was in 2004. On-site reviews and other data collection meetings were gathered over the past 3 years by ASCA. Prior to making this recognition, and we just received a notification that they were being recognized by the Counseling Association for their work. Congratulations there. The middle school was notified that it has received a silver level status as a result of the performance of middle school students who are involved in Math Counts. Now, Math Counts is an enrichment program designed to inspire excellence, confidence, and curiosity in U.S. middle school students, or three things we can just call out of. Beepertown Middle School is one of only 486 schools nationwide to have received this status, which is pretty good when you consider that there are 7,000 schools that compete for it. So congratulations to, again, the middle school in general and the students in the Math Counts program. And that concludes my report.
Thank you.
On tonight's agenda, I have one budget transfer over $5,000 request, which is moving budget money from tuition from the CSE department to tuition in general education. It's specifically for foster placement students that live, were residents in our district, but may have been placed outside of our district, and those districts bill us back. And I'm anticipating with some recent announcements from the DSS office that I'll need a little more money in that account. So that's that one budget transfer on this. And it goes both ways. We also bill districts where students are attending here, but their district of origin was another district. We bill out for that as well. The project that we had been researching and moving forward on, the bond refinancing for the three long-term bonds from the $30 million capital project from the early 2000s that was closed in 03 or 04. It's still progressing nicely. We actually have an estimate of approximately $457,000 in savings that could occur over the next 8 years through the maturities, which are 2020. The attorney in Syracuse is still working on that, and we are anticipating that that will come to closure and completion, that we will be successful with that. And also, recently in the late winter, early spring, received CPSE reimbursement notification from SED that we were able to bill Clinton County and be reimbursed for some CPSE costs. Actually, it totaled $73,000. We billed for it in January or February, and we have collected those. So that's additional revenue as well. Those are the only three items that I have tonight.
Okay, thank you.
When's the bond paperwork become final?
It's not final yet. There was pre-closing today and closing scheduled for later this week. The attorneys were still working on all the documents. He came up and obtained your signatures and moving forward on this. The savings, actually, from the last time I reported, we went out to market to see what investors were interested or responded to the RFPs to see what the savings were. It actually grew a little bit. The interest rates came in a little better than what had been estimated.
Right.
Actually, it almost doubled since we first looked at this last fall. I don't remember, Scott, September, October time period. The estimated savings that we could get over the next 8 years was about $189,000 at that time, and right now we're pretty final on these numbers that it looks like it will actually be
$457,000. Okay, thank you. I want to thank Mary. She's been doing due diligence on this. She's been really keeping on top of this, and $457,000 in savings is a lot of money. It's just for her to keep her on top. She did all the work, and I came in yesterday. I signed my name about 50 different times. I think I gave my house away, but I'm not sure. Okay. Under minutes. Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the minutes of the meeting of the Board of Education held on 416, 417, and 1426.
Motion.
By Leonard.
Second.
By Kathy. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby accept the minutes of the committee meetings held on 417, 426, and 51.
Motion.
Karen?
Second.
By Colleen. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that Superintendent Schools recommends the Board of Education the approval of the CSE recommendations dated 5/8/12.
Motion.
By Richard.
Second.
By Leonard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that Superintendent of School recommends the Board of Education the approval of the CPSE recommendations dated 5/8/12.
Motion.
By Kathy.
Second.
By Stan. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Resolve that superintendent of school recommends to the Board of Education to abolish the following positions for reason of economy effective June 30th, 2012, and the Board of Education hereby directs the superintendent to notify affected individuals affected on or before May 9th, 2012.
Move the list.
Move the list by Richard.
Second.
Second by Pauline. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolve that superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following substitute appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Motion.
By Leonard.
Second.
Second by Karen. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolve that the Board of Education is hereby approve the following appointment for the May 15th, 2012 annual district election and budget vote.
Motion.
By Kathy.
Second.
Second by Richard. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolve that superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve a school-to-school exchange program sponsored by the Center for Cultural Interchange for the 2012-13 school year, contingent upon the trip requiring no additional expenses to the district, including cost for a substitute teacher.
Motion.
By Leonard.
Second.
Second by Richard. Any discussion?
How's the substitute covered?
I would imagine that the individuals are organized in the event of the first student charge for their role being there, and I would imagine it would be diversifying the cost, making it clear to the family that if your child is attending, that a portion of their cost to attend is going to be a bigger substitute. That's a speculation.
So that would come into the district as a donation because we actually have to put a teacher in the classroom and pay the teacher.
That's correct.
So we have a donation reimbursement from somebody to be named.
Is this through the Plattsburgh State Cultural Exchange?
Plattsburgh State, I don't believe that was mentioned in the draft. I don't think it's possible.
So which cultural exchange is this?
Was it a state
level? Looking for any support information on the cultural exchange program?
Actually done through the school-to-school exchange program. That's actually the program
school-based.
Itself.
It's
school-based.
So, yeah. Okay. Thank
you.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolve that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the American Red Cross shelter agreement allowing the Red Cross to use the main campus of the Beatontown Central School District as an emergency shelter during a disaster. The board authorizes the superintendent of schools to execute said agreement on behalf of the district.
Motion.
Second.
By Kathy. Questions on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolve that the superintendent of school recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following transfers over $5,000.
Motion.
By Richard.
Second.
By Stan. Questions? Roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong.
Yes.
Kathy Buckley.
Yes.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Stan Kroski.
Yes.
Richard Levine.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Pauline Stone.
Yes.
Steve Trombley.
Yes. Okay, any other additional items to discuss?
I have a couple, Steve.
Yeah.
I don't know, number one, the first one, whether now is the time to mention it or just wait till July 1st, but I'm going to suggest that in addition to the committees that we serve on, maybe we should form a committee for school lunch. And I don't know whether, you know, we just don't want to forget about that.
Okay.
So maybe we could make note of that.
Karen, could you go over the reason? Everyone knows.
I think for better understanding for some of the audit committee members, and when I used to be chairperson, I did attend the meeting today, but I'd just like to meet and review, so we have a total knowledge of the operation of the school lunch program. That would be my interest, and also financial impact, that kind of thing.
Also, we have some amazing coming in on fresh items, which have to be incorporated into the meals. So those mandates, of course, are going to cost more money.
Thank you.
Of course. So probably committee to take a look at, because if the board remembers, we do have a policy that no child will go hungry, so there are some costs
right.
to the board.
The second item, at our last meeting, I asked a question about polling, doing a survey or an exit poll at our vote. And one fellow board member contacted me and, for very good reasons, felt maybe we shouldn't do an exit poll. And other board members feel that it would be a good idea. And this is just notes that I had typed up that I want to share with Scott if the board wants to do this. And I wonder if we could maybe show our hands if we think we should do an exit poll. And if the majority of the board wants to, I will help in any way I can. But that's this issue.
I definitely support an exit poll. We get just some idea of what the community is thinking.
You get the good idea of the
I'm going to go around Robert Public.
Definitely, yes.
I just hope it doesn't get people mixed up going into vote. That's the only thing.
Because,
and that's the only reason I'm going to talk to her. I don't want to see a mix up of people going in that starts not being able to understand what we've got here. I think it's good to get their input, but I don't know if it's good to do it at the time of the vote.
But actually, what happened after the vote?
Yeah, we tried to handle that.
Yeah, but how are you going to do that? That's going to be a very hard thing to do.
Somebody will have to be there when they're leaving. Because we have an indoor and an outdoor.
Set up a couple of tables on the exit, because there is quite a lengthy exit from where you leave the poll after you vote. Get back up to.
I think doing an exit poll after the vote would actually be advantageous. My concerns would be if we were to wait and do it, you know, a couple days later, for one, we'd have possibly less response. It would probably most likely be computer generated, and then we have time for assessing the responses and redoing the budget, and that's if it doesn't pass.
If you have it that night.
Yeah, so I think that having it on the same night would actually be advantageous time-wise. But I do think that definitely it needs to be a definite split between where you vote and where this is, and the two should not cross.
And
if it's afterwards, after one votes and you're on your way out, there's no reason why you can say, look, I'm willing to do this end of the survey or I'm not, and you just spend the time to do it.
That's it, yeah. If you're willing to do it, you're fine, if not.
It doesn't mean that we can't leave some sort of order for people who weren't there to be able to put their input and then have it all analyzed afterwards. If we can't hear the community what their interest is, then it's hard for us to make decisions. So I support it.
I think we should have one, and the reason I do is because I talk to people every day, but that's one person. This way it would give you an opinion across a wide swath of people.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you have 15 people talk to you about the whole district, they want one thing, but that's only 5% of the, you know, this would give you a better feel for the whole district.
I think we tried to attempt a poll in the past when we were doing informational meetings. And I think what we found out is that the information that we gathered was actually pretty skewed because we had non-residents filling it out, we had high school students filling it out, and it didn't actually give taxpayer input. It gave such a huge range. It was when we were doing multiple nights of budget presentations. And not that their opinions don't matter, they obviously do, but when it comes right down to it, we have to focus on what our taxpayers are saying.
Okay. We have an improved group where we can have someone give it to them some privacy that we can write down and put it in a closed slot so we know it's anonymous and it's not going to be seen by anybody else.
That'd be easy enough too.
Yeah, it's not hard. You don't even have to close it. It can be done on a table off to the side. Yeah, it doesn't have to be covered.
A locked box.
Well, when we voted last time, I
would have to say it should be outside of the gym.
No, it's not. You know, it's not going to be in the gym.
No, it can't be.
Might I make a suggestion?
Yes.
What if we change the flow of the room a little bit so that, because we have a concert that night, so if we put it out in the foyer area, we'll be running into concert people. What if we change the flow so that after you voted, you left the middle school gym out the back door, so you walk into the hallway by the counseling office? We could actually open the counseling conference room as a spot to fill out your information privately. We could have somebody in the hall that, if you were willing, you could step into the conference room, change the flow of it.
As long as everybody's in favor of this, and you guys can, Joanne will be in charge of having, making sure that it's the way it needs to be, and she knows how it has to go. So I don't mean to throw it out in the line, but
okay.
I'll work with Joanne to.
Sure. And I'll work, I'm trying to be helpful to Scott.
Yeah.
Okay, the last item, I handed out a total of three documents, or Pauline handed, when I say number three, the first document, the two-page document that's white, we'll call that number one. Minor additions to the first document, document number two, the yellow one, my question will be, well, first off, last year, Pauline and I asked the Board of Education if we could visit the Press Republican and meet with the editor. And that is what we're asking the Board of Education tonight, is your permission. I've drafted up, some of this is my draft, and the third document in talking with Pauline is Pauline's draft, or part the addition to the document. So if you could take a moment just to read it over. And then my first question would be permission to go tomorrow at 10 o'clock to meet with the editor of the paper. And the second question will be whether the draft, whichever version you would like, whether you want the third document included in whichever one you choose, or if you have changes you want to make, we will be happy to do that.
Two-part process.
Yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
I thought
over yellow and then the second.
Why don't we get approval first, if that, you know, we would like approval from the board if you agree that, that we should meet with the editor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And now the question is, the yellow one, I'm sure you realize, I just included just two changes, the two red changes. It would be page two from the first letter.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, do you want to do number one or number two? We'll start there. The white letter or the yellow one with the red changes? Or additions, I should say. I'm fine either way.
I'm assuming you're supposed to include the second page, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The yellow one more accurate?
Yes, it's addressing more of the issue.
To 12 days, 12.
I'll go yellow.
Yellow, okay. So now the third part is number three. Do you want that included in the letter? You would include it?
And take out, like, out of the yellow, if you include that, they take out one, two, three, the fourth paragraph.
Yeah,
it's redundant.
Yeah, whatever you
do. Okay, so do I have a majority of the people that want this included in it? Okay. All right, thank you. I'll collect those back, if it's okay.
Is there any other additional items to discuss?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'll do that.
Okay, we will have an executive session after the budget hearing, so don't run away on me. Okay, we will take a couple minutes and we will take 2 minutes and we will re-adjourn in the auditorium. There will be public comment after the budget session.
Oh, I'm outnumbered, boy.
Scott, you all set?
Yeah.
Go right ahead. Okay. Just jump into it.
Okay.
Need to call the meeting back to order.
What's that? Do I need to?
Actually,
I didn't adjourn it. I just
moved it. Series of budget presentations.
I just moved it.
This presentation is required by the state so that individual voters would have a comprehensive understanding prior to going into the polls to vote on the budget. And so I will begin immediately. The information I'm going to share with you, there's really a couple of documents I'm going to want to make reference to if you don't have them in your hands, so be sure you get them at your earliest leisure. One of them is the summary of the actual expenditures, revenue, et cetera, for the budget. It's a complete breakdown of all of the figures that comprise the school district budget. Much, much greater detail than I've presented in previous presentations. Although a portion of that document has been presented at least once, if not twice, prior to my presentation this evening. But the complete details are there in that package, so that's for your review. The second is the presentation itself that I will have on the PowerPoint. It's the same presentation I've made with very, very few minor changes as we've encountered a chance to make a change. But I made extra copies of those and put those on the table as well, and they will correspond to the slides that I have up here. So, with no further ado, let me begin and provide you again with an overview of the budget. As with every budget, every school district in the state of New York, there are budget planning challenges that have to be confronted, and ours is no different. You can see a few of those that I've isolated and highlighted up here for you. State aid cuts, yes, we've had reductions in state aid. Our heating, fuel, and diesel costs have continued to increase. A very volatile environment trying to get a handle on what projections to build into a budget for heating costs and fuel costs. And as homeowners, you know that to be true as well. Decrease in interest income. Market's not good for individuals. The market's not good for corporations and or companies and or districts. So we do lose interest income as well. ERS, which is Employee Retirement System, and Teacher Retirement System, TRS, Retirement portion rates have increased. School district, nor any other school district has any control of what those rates are. They are set entirely by the state. So we get information from the state as to what those rates will be, and then they're factored into our building budget. Health insurance rate increases. I'll speak to that very briefly in a future slide, but the health insurance has again increased. We also have our foundation aid, which has been frozen again. Again, a couple more slides will point that out. That's the amount of aid that the state gives to school districts to basically build a net, if you will, under which to support the programs so that they're not entirely borne on the shoulders of taxpayers. Our foundation aid, as it has been in most districts in the state, I can't say all of them, but most districts in the state, we've experienced another year of frozen aid, and in some cases, declining aid. I think you'll see that in a few minutes. Tax levy limit, that's a new one in town. The tax levy limit law, as you know, or probably know, is a requirement that there be a limit placed on the amount of tax levy that can be generated at the local level without requiring of the voters a super majority or super override, if you will. And the law defines that to be a 60% vote. So translation, if there was a budget that was presented to the voters that was above the allowable tax levy limit, and the voters wanted to voted on that budget, if it did not reach passage by 60%, then it could not be the levy that was approved. In our particular district for this year, that has not been an issue because our tax levy limit, which has been identified by the state, this budget is beneath that tax levy limit. So I'll get to that in a moment. Lost federal aid revenues for ARRA and EDU. There are more acronyms in education, I apologize, but American Retirement Act and Education Jobs Funds. We had revenues from both of those sources. Those are federal funds. We've known for the last 2 years that those funds were had a time limit on them, use them or lose them, so to speak. We used them big time last year, actually for this year's budget. It allowed us to make some savings in terms of reductions of positions and programs that we were otherwise facing. Those monies being gone as a federal income source, they could not be relied upon in building this budget, and they weren't relied upon. And they have a corresponding effect on the budget. On the revenue side, we have a decrease in interest income. We have a decrease in pilot revenues. Pilot revenues are those funds that are paid to the district as a result of payment in lieu of taxes, which is what pilot stands for. Payment in lieu of taxes are agreements made between organizations and or entities, town and city governments, if you will, to increase or invite in something like a manufacturing plant would fit that category. So special rates are set for a certain period of time, and school districts benefit from the pilot revenue. We are seeing a decrease in our pilot revenue because the revenues are up, so they don't show up as revenues to us anymore. $2.1 million applied fund balance for this projected budget, a revenue that's just down from $3.54 million of revenue, of fund balance. We have a projected total property assessment base to increase to 0%. It's real important that that's 0% because many people, as taxpayers, you will know, that the assessments on your property may come a little bit earlier than July, but school districts do not get the combined effect of assessment changes in the community until July. Not much help in terms of developing a budget and presenting a budget for the voters to approve with an uncertainty about assessments. Assessment changes up or down will affect tax rate up or down. Doesn't affect with the budget that was voted on by the voters. Expenses. We did have increases. These are all assumptions we built in the budget planning. Increases in salaries in some groups, voluntary pay freezes and other concessions in other groups, 3% health insurance, I pointed that out earlier, 3%. Here are the contribution rates for TRS and ERS, and you'll see, as I pointed out earlier, that they have increased a little bit in both areas, but those are increases that are state controlled. Increases in heating fuel and diesel fuel pricing per gallon. We're not anticipating the budget increased consumption of the fuel, but the actual payment of the fuel that is used is expected to fluctuate, if not increase. So we have to be marginally close, to the best of our ability, looking at five-year trends in both in terms of usage as well as planned usage, as well as fluctuating market prices for fuel, to build in a budget item that we hopefully will satisfy that requirement. If we don't don't hit that target. As every year, school district budgets are scrutinized to determine where are we able to, if we can, make a transfer to cover it. Or we make harder decisions about the travel needed to, the fuel that's needed for the particular item that's being requested to have the fuel applied or supplied. This is just comparative information. I'll be very quick with it. I show it every year. It's just where we stand. Our school district, in terms of enrollment, we are still located as the second largest district in our particular BOCES. And you can see the margin of difference between the top two and the other populations that you see down here. And that was taken, by the way, from the CBS BOCES report that was presented in October of 2011. Budget expenditures and trend analysis. This is trying to take a lot of otherwise lengthy, complicated information, try to reduce it in some kind of pictorial and get some sense to where this money goes. We've got budgeted expenses up here in the top line, expenditures rather, and this line immediately underneath it is aid and levy combined. I guess the point I want to make here for everyone is that if you trace back from 2007-08 all the way to our projected budget of 12-13, and look at that line, you'll see some very interesting and quite and actually disturbing patterns. You'll see a begin of a split in 08-09 between the expenses to operate the district as was built into those budgets that year, those years, and the actual aid and levy available to fund that budget for that given year or those successive years. The margin of difference, if you will, the gray area in between is where fund balance was used to make up the difference. So if you look at the slide, one very positive and very promising, I think, observation is that for 2012-2013, they are on a collision course, and that's good. That simply means that the projected expenditures for the budget, in this case for next year, are down from the previous year, but also the aid and the levy, all of them combined, are coming closer to matching the actual budget expenditures. Again, margin of difference has been made up in the interim years by fund balance. That's what's located up here. These two lines that you see down here break out that line into two separate strands. What's the state aid during that period of time, and what's the tax levy during that period of time? And as you can see from the state aid portion, that'd be the one with the diamonds on it. I'm gonna keep my hands here. The ones with the diamonds on it, beginning in 07-08, 08-09, there was kind of a match between state aid and tax levy, and then you begin to see this gradual decline of the amount of state aid being provided. That's that foundation aid freeze that I've referred to. State aid has an increase requiring more and more of the tax levy to make up the difference. And again, that's even with the fund balance, tax levy had to increase in order to meet the expenditures over those years. Again, the budget expenditures for next year are down, and we'll detail that in greater detail in a moment. Use of the fund balance to offset the tax levy. If you kind of look at those two curves, if nothing else, just visually, this is our fund balance that's been used, and you'll see beginning on 9-10, as the board committed more and more resources out of fund balance, and then 12-13, not so much, and we'll give you the exact amount in a moment. But the curvature I'm trying to make reference to is that the budget expenditure, see that gray area I referred to, can basically be patterned after that curve. More and more fund balance was used to make up that gap between the budget expenditures and tax levy and state aid. If we projected that out, you'd see that kind of a humpback effect would be on all three of those sides. Factual information, just again, I share it every year. It's simply where does the district stand in its tax rate over a period of time. And I've isolated, can't go any further out, so probably in future years we'll have to back off a couple of years just to get more room for new columns, I guess. But the pattern is up and down, as you can see. It started back in 2003 with one rate. It peaked out up here in 2005 and 6 at a different rate, and then it began a downward trend again to 2010-11. It is projected to increase a bit this year, largely because of the difference of some difference is affected by less fund balance being able to apply, despite expenditure reductions. Not enough of expenditure reductions and not enough fund balance to apply to keep that rate in itself continuing the downward trend. Now again, rate will be affected by assessments, which we won't know until July. You might know as individuals before then, but as a district, we won't have the compounded effect of what the tax rate will be until July.
So in previous slides, you might recall, I had this little red bubble there that kind of floated up and floated down depending on what the number became. We don't know that number yet. We won't know until July. Tax rates, again, very just descriptive data between 2010 and 2011. You can find the different districts where neighbors reside and friends, etc. And here's our district, just isolating it, that it shows that the projected tax rate the real tax rate in 11-12 was 1671 per thousand. And that's its location compared to the other districts. This chart will change once all those districts report in and their budgets are done. And we'll find where we position ourselves then. 2012-13 budget impact. Overall, budget to budget will be decreasing by 3.2%. That's that expenditure slide that I showed earlier. The tax levy increase is set at 2.7%. The tax rate is 17-17. That's what's projected, which is a slight increase over the current 16-71. Just a few seconds longer on the 2.7% tax levy increase. I mentioned earlier that the state, the law that was required for tax levies to have a 2% threshold, if you will, on levy increase from year to year. I've mentioned in previous sessions that law affects different districts different ways because there's certain allowable expenses in District A that might not be present in District B, and therefore that percent may not be a true 2%. There are fluctuations in the allowable tax levy increase that run below 2 and all the way up to, I've heard of one district pushing 3, 9, and 4 as the allowable tax levy increase. This board took all of the data presented to it and recognized that the allowable tax rate that was available to it as a board to build this budget around could go as high as 3.7%. As a body, if the board voted not to do that and keep the tax levy increase at 2.7%, and therefore all the figures in this budget reflect a lower than allowable tax levy rate that was available to that body. It's a little busy with these slides. That's why I hope you have the handouts. I won't detail everything in there, but there are a couple of things to point out. This is the revenue slide, so these are the major areas that make up the revenue. Non-tax revenues, which is state aid, federal aid. It could be funds gained from attendance at events. There's a whole list of items that create revenue, if you will, for the district, and they're non-tax revenues. We have an appropriated fund balance that's been spoken to several times, but it shows you what those amounts were in 2011-12. The fund balance was 3.574, and the 2012-2013 fund balance is going to be listed at 2.117. Real property taxes, again, the taxing differential between the two districts. The amount is listed here on the right, and I guess for my purpose, I would want you to see that there are decreases in those two major columns. Non-tax revenues have decreased, and appropriate fund balance has decreased in terms of applying it to the budget challenge at hand. And those are the percentages represented there, leading to the proposed tax rate or the estimated proposed tax rate that we see here. The bottom graph is a very quick look at the assessed value, taxable assessed valuation as we knew it to be in 11-12, and as we are projecting, we just do a rollover. We have no way of knowing, as I said earlier, what the assessed valuation will yield. But we're counting on, this budget is built on, the budget the board has approved, is counting on a 0% change in the tax assessed valuation base. It goes up, it changes the budget. If it goes down, it affects the budget. But the budget's been approved, it'll just affect tax rate. Quick view of the fund balance summary. Fund balance unreserved as of June 30th of 2011 was $7,311. In the 2011-12 budget, the year we're living in, the board applied fund balance to that challenge, but it also gained $282,000 to be applied in fund balance for summer school revenues that were claimed and received. This was one of many super efforts, and I do emphasize super efforts placed on the part of the business office as well as other individuals in the district to go back and discover whether we could reclaim funds that at one time we thought were not able to be claimed. And working diligently, state ed, we discovered, and they agreed, and they sent the check, so I know they agreed,
that there's $282,000 that was given back to the district that would go into its fund balance. So the subtotal of available fund balance this year to use in this year's budget was $3,708,000. Then, as you probably remember, the state of New York does allow school districts to retain up to 4% of its unreserved fund balance. And so we do a simple math formula. What is the fund balance that we have? What is 4% of that to keep back, to be retained, if you will? And that would amount to $2,181,000 and some change. That would be the amount that would otherwise be available for another budget year. However, we also know that there are some uncollectible receivables in the amount of $63,000. That category refers to the pilot programs for which we would otherwise have counted receiving revenue from, and that based on litigation between the company affected and the townships affected, they worked out an agreement to minimize the impact, if you will, on their agreement with one another. The problem with that is the school districts were not factored into that. And so how would the schools be affected? When we raised that issue and researched it legally, we discovered that it was a binding final decision, and so the impact on us was a loss of $63,000 of revenue that we would otherwise have counted on. So we have to take that out of fund balance. So when you add, subtract those columns, as I presented them there, the available fund balance for the 2012-2013 budget revenue source is $2,179,949. Budget-to-budget expenditures, pretty detailed sheet, and I won't go through all of them for you. You have them in your handout, but I will tell you that base salaries and benefits obviously comprise the largest portion of a school district's budget because it's a human enterprise. It's got teachers, bus drivers, custodians, maintenance workers, administrators, secretaries, it's people. And that's where the biggest amount of costs come to run any school district. And that's what and associated with the salaries and other pay, such as stipends, home teaching, et cetera, substitute costs, you have the employee benefits that go along with them. For the 2011-2012 year, compared to that year to our projected budget for next year, you will see a slight increase in employee benefits, but if you look at the salary portion comparing 2011 to our projected 2012, you will see a significant reduction over $1,187,000. That reduction comes, as you well know, if you attended the board meeting earlier, that comes on the heels of making staff reductions and among a number of other reductions that were made to make this budget work at 2.7% tax levy. And that's why you see a reduction of such an amount under salaries and other pay. Pretty much most of these columns, they're hard to see from where you are, and it doesn't create black and white, but almost all of these columns going down this sheet, if you just look at the brackets, you will recognize those are negative numbers. So comparisons between 2011 and 2012, pick any category you want. I'll take CSE Student Services as an example. If you follow that, my line across, you'll see that there's been a reduction projected for operations with children with special education needs of $270,000. That's one bracketed item. Anywhere where you have the brackets represents this budget's intention to reduce the costs associated with those items by that amount of money. We also built in, for general purposes, a peek at what percentage does that represent of the total budget. Sometimes, you know, the question is, does item A have that big an impact on the budget? Well, it's hard to try to give a quantified answer to that in terms of what do you call a big impact. So what we try to do is put percentages by them so you can see what percent of the total budget is represented by that particular item. And you'll see down here the total budget shows a reduction. I'm having trouble from an angle here, but $1,213,000, I think $114,000, or 3.2% reduction. Part of developing this budget was to work with our bargaining units, both in a negotiations format as well as in a concessions concept. And there were many of those kinds of maneuvers that were undertaken that helped make this budget, contribute to the budget numbers that we are presented to the board before they adopted the budget. Beekman County Teachers Association has a one-year contract that was negotiated, but part of that negotiations involved $300,000 agreement not to honor or not to follow the tri-borough agreement, which allows for step increases that will occur automatically. They passed on that tri-borough agreement and represented Safety District $300,000. Pinckney Town Support Staff Supervisor has a contract that was negotiated. In the negotiations, they made concessions in some areas of freezes on salary, but concessions on a few other. To call them concessions after a contract adopted is not really accurate. It's negotiations. But in the negotiations, that which was sought and that which they settled on were different, were lower than what was sought. So in that concept, I would just have you know that that group participated in some idealism, fiscal oversight, if you will, in helping us achieve the goal that we're trying to achieve as a school district. Pinckney Town Administrators Association, same thing occurred. They'll have a contract resolution, and it has concessions within it as well. The items that were requested were no longer settled on, and they were cost savings to the district. I've made concessions, again, and that's a matter of history. I've done that before. And Pinckney Town exempt class employees now have contracts, but those contracts also reflect concessions. If you want, again, hanging on to that word concession, that's negotiation agreement. The negotiations have allowed for movement to Plan B, in some cases, for insurance, as well as reductions, if not flat-out salary freezes for some of the members.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The position reductions, this list hasn't changed from last time we kind of presented. I presented the same list a couple of times. The board took action earlier this evening on the group as a body. But just to buy a quick reference, and here you can just flip to the next slide. 25% of the physical education position. You can see all the other positions up here. Just a quick note, and I've explained in detail to the board that if we were to add up the positions that that appeared on the agenda this evening and did a match against the numbers, you would find that they don't add up equally. That's because I'm required to eliminate positions in full, and then after those positions are eliminated, go back to the people who are affected, for example, like a 0.6 position, and offer them that position at 0.6. It's possible that that individual may say no, in which case I then have the need and opportunity to go and ask another qualified person who's available and at least senior, or more senior, do you want the position? So we first eliminate all the positions, and then we go back through the exercise of going to those part-time positions and fill them. I have met with the individuals affected by all of these positions, both full and part-time, and feel comfortable, although I can never be more comfortable with this kind of thing, but feel comfortable that they understand why the eliminations are a full elimination when perhaps they understood completely, well, it was going to be a 4/10 of an elimination. Why did it appear that way? I've done my best to communicate with them prior to tonight, and I've got to feel pretty good about the audience here, the size, to suggest that it must have been effective enough for their comfort level. So those are the positions under the instructional area. That's just the instructional area. We also made reductions in non-instructional areas. You can see them here. They have not changed from earlier presentations, and those are the categories in which they occurred. Again, the primary goal, the primary goal I had through this exercise, painful as it was, is to try to find a way to diversify the impact across all of the district employee groups, and in doing so, do my best to try to minimize the overall impact on the students that we serve, either through programs and or through the people that serve the programs, keeping in mind that there was a significant reduction that had to be made. Any way we did it, any way I found it, I tried to use those parameters as my guideposts. And that was applied, as you can see, not just instructional, but non-instructional. And the next slide, Gary. We have effects of position reductions. I pointed these out earlier. We'll have increases in class sizes. We'll have modifications in the K-12 music program. This budget eliminates driver's education. It reorganizes elective offerings in some courses, eliminates exploratory foreign language as an example. On and on, you can read it. There's a 30% reduction in interscholastic sports because that's been an issue that's raised attention more than once. So I kind of put that one in there in particular so you'd be able to draw attention to what it is. Not that it's any more or less important, a negative impact on the district. It just is. It's been talked about, so I put that one in there. Gary? This is a breakdown. You have it in your handouts as well. It breaks down our enrollment patterns as we know them to be and we project them to be.
And off to the right-hand side is the column that speaks to the contractual language associated with minimum sizes and maximum sizes. The previous slide spoke to the fact that there will be some increases in some of the classrooms. This particular slide gives you a numerical presentation of how big or what those changes will look like. And you can see kindergarten through grade 5 at Deacon Town Elementary. You've got a minimum range and a maximum range, and you can see for yourself the conclusion you would draw as to whether or not the projected student to teacher ratio, gets much, much closer to the maximum ranges that are made available. And in some cases, we have to watch very, very carefully. If a class size exceeds that limit, we have to be prepared as a district to have a plan to address that increase. There are a couple of ways to do that, and we're not there yet, but I just want to assure everyone that we are not looking at particular grade levels that are going to be exceeding the maximum range. There will be responses to keep that from happening, whenever that does occur. Cumberland Head, very similar chart, very similar numbers actually. K through 5, you'll see the number of teachers in 11-12 and enrollment for those grade levels. Grades 12 and teachers in years 12 and 13, you have them here. And the projected class enrollments for those grade levels. They're not changing much between 11 and 12 and 12-13, primarily because in 11-12, the school made decisions relative to some of those reductions I talked about and converted some of the classroom teachers into the push-in for assistance teachers for each classroom size from larger anyway, because there was one less teacher per class that was assigned as a regular classroom teacher. They became AIS, or Academic Intervention Service Instructors. So the ratio of the increases does not look like it's increased that much, and it really hasn't, but it's primarily for that reason. But again, the minimums and the maximums ranges are over here on the right, and you can kind of draw your own conclusion as to how close the target of projected we are to the somewhere between minimum and maximum range. This budget is based on this data, taking into account staffing needed to make this happen. I pointed out athletics. I won't deal with this a lot. There was a 30% reduction. You can see that in your printout where the reductions are. It will require, because we want to attempt to maintain the three levels of participation with modified JV and varsity, but at reduced levels, it is going to require understanding and cooperation from our parents and families. One-way transportation for the games is going to be extremely important to be honored, because we're not building in extra budget for busing to and from. It's get you there, and then the buses are coming home. And then also, this one down here could have an in-house dinner table issue more than it does primarily as a district, and that's capping the number of participants on a particular team. We have tried in the past to honor as many students who want to participate in the various events, and that has obviously contributed to increased costs to be able to continue to honor that. This budget is built on the assumption that there will be cap limitations on competitive team sports, which simply means there will be more students who have tried out, who want to, but may not be actually identified as making a team. So that's the athletic reductions. We try to show in a pie chart just how this affects. It's hard to see it up here. It's in dark green, but in your handouts you have it. How much of the budget is projected to be paid by the local tax dollars? You'll see it's not yet 50-50, but we're getting close. And real property taxes represent 49.5%, and state, if you will, that's where the rest of the revenue comes in, represents the difference of that. It's getting closer and closer. Previous years, that slice would have been smaller, and the state's contribution would have been bigger. And as I pointed out earlier, we watched a declining base of frozen tax aid to school districts, which means their size of the pie doesn't get commensurately bigger with the cost of running a district, but the localities, each local district and its voters have to make a decision about making up the difference between the tax levy or tax that is provided by the state and the cost for education. This is another way of breaking it out, a little messier, but maybe cleaner for some. It does show the salaries and benefits representing 68.7% of the total budget. As I've said earlier, there should be a surprise to that because it's people-driven. But everything else is out here in the margin to show you percentages of how the dollars are spent and divided up: occupational ed services, debt service, and interfund. 8.93% is an important percentage, or actually that amount. That's simply because the building project completed that actually helped make this the
this plant what it is way back when it was the building was rebuilt and added onto, has a debt that comes with it. The state just didn't say go ahead and have it, it's yours. They said we'll give you a period of time where you don't have to make payments on the debt. But that period of time is up, and each year now we know, part of planning on a future budget, that there will be debt service payments that have to be made. And in this budget, we are reflecting an understanding of a debt payment service of $3.3 million. And you can see the rest of the student services, that special needs population. Again, $3.3 million of that, and I understand, as I pointed out earlier, that the CSC director has done an incredible job in being able to bring back programs, save the district money, while we still have escalating increases in special education costs. In fact, it's not in your handout, but I picked up a quick piece. It is in your handout, actually. But on one of the report card pages, you'll find toward the bottom of one of the report card pages, it makes a comparison between this district's contribution in terms of special ed students, special needs students, and statewide average. And as an average, our district is higher, almost by 5%, higher than the state average in the number of students who receive CSE services and therefore are required by law to have services paid on their behalf. So that's an important reference point, because there's some things that we make reductions in, there's other things that, despite efforts to reduce, might outreach our reduction effort because the increases of students keep requiring that the bill keeps coming. So I just point that out because you're not coming across it in one of the report card pages. Gary? So in summary, I wanted to point out again, the budget-to-budget decrease, it is decreasing by $1.2 million or 3.2%. The tax levy could have been set at anywhere between 0 and 3.7, and the board knew it could go as high as 3.7, but set it at 2.7. The projected tax rate is listed here again, and the tax rate as we currently operate in this year. A couple more slides, I think, and we'll be finished. Effects of the tax rate increase. There was a question asked in a couple of other sessions, what would the effect be of the tax rate increase if it bumped up $100 or $1,000 in property value? So we built a chart just for a reference point. There's no certainty. This isn't speaking to any particular taxpayer's bill or anything. It just gives you reference points of what would happen on the tax rate. So if the total assessed valuation is $100,000, the tax rate is $17.17 per thousand, the tax bill would be $17.17. Only a comma, not a period between those, fortunately. Compared to the actual bill on that same assessed value, it would have been $16.71, or a difference of an increase of $46. The higher up you go, if it's $150,000, obviously it stretches $500,000 assessed valuation, and $1 million. We just took it out that far just to give reference points to have you kind of predict what your assessments will come in at and the bearing that the tax rate could have on your out-of-pocket increase. So $100,000 went up year to year, $46. Goes to $150,000 equal year to year, $69. $500,000 year to year comparison is $230,000, and so on. So that's just a comparison slide for your reference. School district budget notice. This is the budget notice that's being mailed to your households tomorrow, again by law. It contains the information basically summarizing what I've covered here and gives you references of what the school budget is that you will be asked to vote on when you step into the booth to make your vote known. It breaks out everything, the budget amount for 2010-11, the proposed budget here, the contingency budget. Contingency budget refers to the amount of the budget that will be required to be found or made whole if the voters reject the budget. I believe there's two opportunities that are provided for that consideration to be made. But we also require on that budget notice, by law, to put this information in here, and that's what you'll be getting in your mail. So for any reason, if you as a taxpayer feel that you have not received this budget notice, please contact your office. We operate with the addresses that we know to be taxpayers, and we work closely with all of our postal agencies and every other agency we can to be sure that everyone who is entitled to see the notice, in fact, has received the notice. So be looking for that in the next couple of days, please. That's it. Other than questions or comments, a quick reminder, I have to write it down to remind myself. If you don't have written in your calendars yet, the budget vote is May 15th, and the polls for the budget, as well as school board elections, is going to be 11 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Okay, at this time, we will have public comment. If anybody would like to address the board or superintendent at this time, you may do so.
My name is Eric Anderson. I have several questions. One, earlier you guys voted on deciding to do a survey before the election. Is it possible to get a, or not before the election, but after the election, is it possible to get a copy of that survey before it's done?
I'm sorry. Well, yeah, we're going to draft it, but in terms of when it's finalized?
When it's finalized and done, you can have it on, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you also, the board decided to have two members go and meet with the editor of the Press Republican, and I'm wondering if it's possible to get a copy of that letter that you were reviewing tonight. Then my third thing, I decided to call the property tax. And they actually gave me some numbers. It's preliminary because I know it's tentative because people can you know file a grievance or something like that. But they, when I was looking at the numbers, it is going to go up slightly by about 1.46%. So when I was doing the math, it looked like it was going to be more like 1691, not 1717. So just because I know everybody's received, most people have received their assessment. So right. If you're going out there and you're voting and you're expected to go 17-17 and right. It went up by, 20%, you're sitting there and, well, at least if it's 16.91.
You can understand my hesitancy on giving a firm number. And in the past, I've usually given a range because we didn't have it.
I just wanted to get that attention out because I called them today. And like they said, I know it's preliminary because it's not. Mm-hmm. Then I had a question. You mentioned that there was only two school monitors being dropped, but then in your vote, you have eight listed.
Yep, that corresponds. I'm sorry, I was stepping on your question. I think you're asking, those numbers don't match up. If two are cut, how come the eight were reduced?
Right, and does that mean because now you're going to have a certain number of part-time? I mean, nope. I understood your part-time comment because that's kind of how I assumed you were having to do it anyway.
Yep.
You can't cut a half a person. You kind of have to cut the whole person.
Yep.
And then you can bring them back up part time. But I wasn't sure why that was 8 and 2 was different. And then I had a similar question with the elementary school because there was 4 positions showing on the slide, but you showed 6 in when you have the position cut. So I just wanted you to explain that.
Sure.
And then I have one last question that I'll wait till your response first.
I'll respond to those.
Yeah,
We reduced or sent letters and informing all of the monitors that the positions will all be eliminated with the idea of calling back the monitors, all but two. And they're not in a bargaining unit. They don't have a bargaining class associated with that. So we just make the determination of notifying everyone. And then the individuals to come back to the district are invited back minus two positions that are being reduced. The results of the teaching reductions is the difference between staff reductions and the actual people being reduced, because some of the, as you kind of alluded to earlier, some of the individuals are in it. One individual in particular, for example, has a certification that will allow for a transfer into another area out of the regular classroom. The position gets cut, but the person is becoming another, allowed to be employed and is eligible to be employed in a different capacity in the district. The part-time positions, I'm not sure I lost a little bit of your question.
You explained the part-time positions.
Okay,
I understood that. Where you have 1.6, but you showed us 2 in the thing because you cut the positions and then you bring them back or share them. I understood that. Then my final thing was just a comment on your slide about the real property taxes and we're not at that 50%. I think given that the 2.1 million fund balance is the taxpayers' money, we actually are over 50% right now. I mean, I know the slide, I read the slide. The slide said all other revenue, but I think you then stated that it's state aid, and I think people should know that it's actually the taxpayers contributed $20 million, even though some of that is in previous years that's being added up from the fund balance.
My energy with the state, and I hope it's a common energy among our community, is to work with them on unfunded mandates and getting them to get a bigger share of the cost of education and reduce the cost at the local level. The grant was perhaps not as complete with the fund balance piece missing, but it does represent how closely those two things are divided, if equally divided at all.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Yes. Steve, I have, is there a procedure in place for this year to ensure before the voting starts that all of the machines are in sync and all the information is accurate in terms of we don't have any repeat?
Yes, there is, but you could go look at them if you